All right, good morning, everyone. Let us begin. So this morning, in Yirtzeh Hashem, we are going to conclude our section on the Eretz, our section on the Earth. Thank you. And just to reorient ourselves a little bit to where we left off. So we left off in the middle of the incredible piece by the Rebbe of Stefanesh, the Perishman on Pirkei Avos, source number 8 on your sheet. So if you remember again, the Rebbe introduced us to the concept, as espoused by Voltaire, that the perfect is the enemy of the good. Thank you very much. So the Rebbe introduced this concept, ultimately again, as saying that sometimes in the pursuit of the perfect, and in the pursuit of trying to do things just as we think they should be done, or as we intend for them to be done, we lose out on the opportunity to do things in a very meaningful and good way in the pursuit of the perfect. And the Rebbe explained this idea that sometimes the pursuit of perfection allows us to go ahead and almost exempt ourselves in the pursuit of many incredible life things. Because we feel if I can't do something perfectly, then it is simply not worth being done. And of course, as the Rebbe explained so profoundly, most things in life cannot be performed through the lens of perfection, because perfection rests with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, again, the Kadosh Baruch Hu never demands perfection of us. Instead, what does He demand of us? Effort. Effort. And at most, what He demands of us is to try to accomplish good. So let's pick up. I left off in the middle of number 8. We're towards the end of number 8. If you look right by the letter D in source number 8, it's about one line above that. Yubishvil Hatov Yoser Eina Ose Es Hatov. That is a very profound line. Underline that line, because that's the sort of Bishvil Hatov Yoser, because of a pursuit for perfection, Eina Ose Es Hatov. A person does not perform Tov. He goes on, Va'aleim hiskavein Rabbi Tarfon ba'omro limor. Remember, again, we're commenting on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Lo alecha ha'malacha ligmor. It is not your job to finish the malacha, to finish the work. So, Rotzeh lomar, kishi yavo eizah davar liyadcha, lo titar lasos davka satov yoser bedavar, ki az lo sasem u'ma. So says Rabbi Tarfon, if you, in life, you pursue perfection, if in life your goal is perfection, if the goal is to do anything perfectly, you'll end up doing absolutely nothing. Remember, we spoke about this last time, that in reality, when people say they're perfectionists, what are they really? Insecure or scared of failure. So people often hide behind perfectionism as a way of, it's almost like a license not to try certain things for fear of failure. So I'm not afraid of failure. I'm a perfectionist. No, you're not a perfectionist. No one's a perfectionist. The only perfectionist in this universe is the Ribbono Shel Olam, because He's the only one who could control all of the results. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only perfectionist. And even the Ribbono Shel Olam, does He operate through the lens of, or does He operate through the prism of perfection? No. Remember, again, we spoke about this. By the way, we'll tie this back to the Aretz. The Ribbono Shel Olam does many things. You know, one of the great lines. There's a rabbi by the name, I forgot his last name. I think it's Elimelech Goldberg. He has an organization called Kids Kicking Cancer. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's an incredible thing where he uses martial arts as a way of helping children with cancer kind of take control of their circumstances. He has a great line in his book. He writes, God created a perfect world imperfectly. God created a perfect world imperfectly. What does that mean? Everything the Ribbono Shel Olam does is perfect. Hatsur tamim pa'alo. But yet, when you look around the world, it appears that there are so many imperfections. Those imperfections are there by design. Kadosh Baruch Hu created an imperfect world perfectly. Everything the Ribbono Shel Olam does is perfection, but yet again, it appears to us as highly imperfect. And part of that yesod is because, remember, if there were to be perfection, if the world would look perfect, that would allow us to create unrealistic expectations for ourselves. I would think just as God is a creator of perfection, so too I'm supposed to be a creator of perfection. But the Ribbono Shel Olam creates an imperfect world perfectly, thereby highlighting the yesod that no, there is no perfection in this world. Question?
Yeah, No, there is no perfection in this world. Kadosh Baruch Hu, again, on a Ribono Shel Olam kind of cosmic level, everything is perfect because everything comes together. But on a perception level, there is so much profound imperfection, and that is by design. To teach us that our goal in life is not perfection. Our goal is not to be perfectionists. Our goal is not the Tov Biyoser. This is very important. Our goal in life is not the Tov Biyoser. Our goal in life is Tov, to do good. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to do good. Now, of course, once you achieve good, what's your goal? Better, right? That's always the goal. But the goal is never perfection. Because anything you set out on in life with a goal of perfection, first of all, you won't achieve it. And when you don't achieve that which you set out to do, sometimes you run the risk of becoming disillusioned. And when you become disillusioned, so sometimes ultimately, again, a person could simply give up on trying and doing anything. So the Rebbe goes on, he says something amazing. He says, Rabbi Tarfon says, Lo alacha malacha ligmar. So the malacha is not yours to finish. So what does that mean? Rabbi Tarfon says, Lo alacha malacha ligmar. What is Rabbi Tarfon really saying according to the Shtefen Eshter? He's saying, your job is not perfection. Meaning, finishing the malacha, that represents perfection. That represents perfection. Lo alacha hamalacha ligmar means, you are not held accountable for perfection. You are not held accountable to create perfect results. On the flip side, v'alecha ladas, kilo alecha malacha ligmar, rach mechuyiv atalasos b'yicholascha. The only thing you are obligated to do is put in your effort. Ki lo ato ben chorin lehibatel mimena. So this is such a beautiful interpretation of the Mishnah. Lo alecha hamalacha ligmar means, you are not responsible for perfection. But lest you think that because you're not responsible for perfection, you're not responsible for anything. You are also not free to exempt yourself from trying. So while it is true that I am not held responsible for perfection, I am absolutely held responsible for putting in effort. I am absolutely held responsible for producing good results. Perfect results, I'm not responsible for. Good results, I'm absolutely responsible for. Rotzi lomar ki bazeh she'ata rotzi la'asos es hatov yoser, ein ata ben chorin li'ibata memena be'esh ha'davar hi lemala mi'acholascha v'lo la'asos es hatov. When perfection is unattainable, don't think that therefore you are not chayiv, you're not obligated to do anything. I'ata ben chorin li'ibata memena, if you can't get the tov bi'yoser, you could always achieve the tov. So incredible, incredible yisod. And this is so important. Because whether we realize it or not, so many times we create perfect expectations. This is in a variety of things. We often create perfect expectations of ourselves in life. And again, when sometimes looking for a spouse, we create perfect expectations of what we're looking for. After you find a spouse, we often create perfect expectations in the context of a marriage. Anytime you create expectations of perfection, there is one thing you could count on, which is what? Failure. No one could measure up to perfection. No one. Again, the Ribono Shel Olam could measure up to perfection. But even the Ribono Shel Olam, let's be honest, so many people walk around with tainus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, questions on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't understand why I did this. I don't say, see, even the Ribono Shel Olam, we know, I know intellectually that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is perfect. But yet there are many times I look around the world and I don't understand things because they look highly imperfect. So if the perfect being could create circumstances which look imperfect, then obviously imperfect beings like all of us cannot create perfect results. So says the Shtefen Eshter, that's the meaning of Rabbi Tarfon. Lo alecha malacha ligmar, don't create expectations of perfection. Because if you do, not only will you not succeed in creating perfection, but you will also not even try to accomplish something good. Don't aim for perfection, aim for good. Now again, I want to temper this message in just a little bit, because sometimes when you hear this, don't aim for perfection, aim for good, that doesn't chas v'shalom mean that be satisfied with mediocre results. Remember, all good means, good is great. Right? Good is great. What it means is, I can't get to perfection. That is true. but I still have to try to achieve good. And like we said before, as I get to good, I have to try to do better. It's always about pushing and pushing and pushing and growing and advancing. It's not, you have to be careful not to take this as a ptur, as an exemption from accomplishing something great. Well, if perfect is the enemy of the good, then I guess good is good enough. No, good is a great place to start, but good is a departure point. Right, good is a stepping stone to great, and great becomes greater, and greater becomes even greater, and even greater becomes even more greater. Not appropriate English, but you understand. But again, understanding, I'm never going to reach perfection, but that I'm not obligated to reach perfection, but I have to keep growing where I am. I'll give you, if you take a look at number 9, Rabbi Lau, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, the former chief rabbi of Israel, now the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, probably like one of the most incredible personalities of our generation. He wrote a beautiful parish on Pirkei Avos called Yachel Yisrael. So I want to quote you. So he's quoting on this Mishnah of Rabbi Tarfon. Look what he writes. Pretty much the same idea, but he illustrates it, I think, in such a beautiful way. He says, La'achar advar makolmin. Look at number 9, paragraph A. After what we said before, a person can make a mistake, and they can think the following. Says Rabbi Lau, a person can think like this. After Rabbi Tarfon says, Lo alecha malacha ligmar, you know, a lot of people, when they read that phrase, how do they feel after they read that phrase? Great, right? Why do you feel great after you read that phrase? If you misinterpret it, what could it mean? You're done. Lo alecha malacha ligmar. Great, fantastic. Fantastic. Because I could just as easily read that as, I'm not really responsible. I'm not responsible. Lo alecha malacha ligmar. I am not responsible for what happened. I don't control the results. So it's interesting because you have different kinds of people. Some people are perfectionists. So ultimately, again, they use perfectionism as a way to hide insecurities. I'm really scared of failing. But no one likes to say they're insecure. So instead, what I say is, I only do things that I could do perfectly. But the Rashi on that is, oh, because you're scared to fail. So some people use perfectionism as a way of hiding insecurities. And interestingly enough, some people also say, you know what, if I don't control the results, that means I'm not responsible either. And if I'm not responsible, then what's the point of trying? Really, whatever I do doesn't make any level of difference anyway. So Rabbi Lau says, you could read that phrase, lo alecha hamalacha ligmar, and you can internalize it to mean, well, if I'm not responsible for the outcome, that means because I don't really control all of the variables. And if I don't control the variables, then what? Then what? What's the point of even trying? Right? My effort doesn't really do anything. Look what he writes. Ki mi'achar she'in darshin mimenu ligmar as hamalacha. After I am not responsible for the results, right? Then I have no responsibility. Again, understand, there is this incredible dialectic. Because is it true in life that you're never responsible for the results? Is that true? Is that a true statement in everything in life? No, of course not. Of course not. Think about this in just a moment. Right? You have to go shopping. So you go to 7 Mile Market, you have a shopping list. It has 15 things on it. You only get 7. You only get 7. You come home. And somebody says, what happened to the other items? You pull out your Pirkei Avos, La Lecha Hamalacha Ligmar. What can I do? Is that true? No. So obviously there are many things in life that you do control the outcome. This is very important. There are many things in life that you control the process. Things in day-to-day life. You have an exam. Do you study for it or not? Right? So to say, you know what, it's in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everybody becomes incredible ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, you know, when it comes to things that they don't really want to be metapel in. It's incredible. People very often use emuna as a crutch. If I don't want to exert the effort, it's in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. That's true. It's very often, everything is in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. But a lot of times, Ribono Shel Olam also delegates certain things to us and says, if you put in the ishtadlus, you'll be successful. So this is an incredibly, it's a very dangerous dictum. Because Rabbi Tarfon is saying, lo alecha hamalacha ligmar. The responsibility is not upon you to finish the job. That's true in some areas in life. And especially as you get older, you will see that there are things that you embark on. You don't control all of the variables. Rabbi Tarfon says, your job is not perfection. Your job is not to cross the finish line. Your job is to begin the marathon. Your job is to begin the race. That's your job. You start. But there are other things in life that are absolutely unequivocally alocha ligmar, alecha ligmar. So Rabbi Lau says, finding this balance between when am I responsible to see things to fruition, when am I responsible for the results, versus when am I just responsible for the effort, person has to be honest with themselves about the particular situation in life. He goes on, V'fichach, Mamshech HaTana V'Omer, Ki Al Af, She'in B'Yechaloso Shala Adam Ligmar Es HaMalachto, Miko Mokom Asolo Lehis Batal Mimena L'Chalutin. So, step one is determining, is this a situation which I control the outcome or not? Do I control the outcome in this given life situation? So the answer to that many times in life is yes. I do control, and you understand I was giving you the 7 Mile Market example, obviously a little bit joking, but it's representative of a certain category of dynamic life activity. There are certain things in life that I control, that are in my control. If it gets done, it's because I did it. If it doesn't get done, it's because I didn't exert enough effort. Then there are other categories of life where, no, I want to do something, I want to accomplish something, but the actual accomplishment, there are many other variables involved. So step one in life, what type of life situation is it? Do I have full control or don't I have full control? If I have full control, exert full control, get the job done. If I don't have full control, so then what? Try your best. Recognize I don't have full control. That's Aleph. I don't have full control. But even though I don't have full control, there's the Yetzirah then to say, well, if I can't control the outcome, what's the point in trying? What's the point in trying? To which Rabbi Tavron comes along and says, no. Even if you don't control the outcome, you can't assure perfection. You must put in your effort. Yes. That's beyond your control. I agree. Look, I'll tell you. You know, the Sefer HaChinuch brings down an interesting question. He says the following. He says, imagine for a moment you're walking down a path and there are thorn bushes on each side of the path. And you walked a little too close to the left and you cut your arm. Was that ordained by... Did the Ribbono Shel Olam do that or did you do that? Both is always a safe answer. Good. Or who did it? Beautiful. That is an incredible. I don't know who else. I know Rabbi Nachman of Breslov takes that approach, and Chassidus is a very big approach as well. This idea, beautiful. Before it happens, it's your bechira. After it happens, it's the ratzon habore. Beautiful, beautiful idea. That example is a subject of fierce theological debate. Fierce theological debate. There's a school of thought that says the Ribbono Shel Olam is not involved in that. You were careless. You are careless. It's clear. Had you just stayed in the middle of the path, you wouldn't have gotten caught.
How could someone say that Ribbono Shel Olam is not involved in that?
I'm sorry?
How could someone say that Ribbono Shel Olam is not involved in that?
Because the idea is, how did that happen? Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu push you into it? Mm-hmm. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu pushed you into it, then how do you have Bechira?
Well, we don't understand Bechira, but
we know that. We don't understand Bechira, but at the end of the day, again, remember, the truth is, that is the true answer. That's the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. Right, because Rambam Hilchos Tshuva discusses this idea that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what I'm going to do, he knows that I'm going to sin, not going to sin, then I don't really have Bechira. But if he doesn't know, then he's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why the Rambam says we don't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Bechira. But there is this tension. The Shaila just is like, the reason I'm bringing this down is, what is my responsibility in life? Because understand, if you say that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's why I got my arm cut, then what's my personal responsibility in those things? And then isn't there a danger? Okay, so good. So you could do the before-after idea, absolutely. But I'm saying, again, but that before piece says, I got cut because I did it. Now, after the fact, I recognize that getting cut is part of the tachlis, is part of the greater plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I'm just pointing out, but there's a school of thought that says, no, that wasn't you, that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbono Shel Olam obviously wanted that to occur, that's why it occurred. Now, again, there's not a right or a wrong answer over here. It's a fundamental theological debate about how the notion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bechira intersect in this world. Yes?
I was just thinking, let's say for Averus, how could that be the rest of Hashem afterwards?
Incredible. So I'll tell you, so first of all, right, it's amazing. The Rambam brings down this idea about Bechira. He doesn't bring it down in Hilchos Deos. He brings it down in Hilchos Tshuva. So how could it be? So I understand, you know, if I get cut by the thorn afterwards, that's a Ratzon Hashem. Maybe it was Kapara, maybe this. How could an Avera after the fact be the Ratzon Hashem? What's the answer? I'm sorry? But why? I'm going to say, why does Hashem want me to do an Avera? We do know. It doesn't always we don't know, right? We absolutely know. Why?
People are perfect, and that's why we're in this world.
Say that again.
People are perfect, that's why.
Therefore, what? What does the Avera allow for?
Shuvah.
I'm sorry.
Shuvah.
Correct. Understand. This is going to sound very strange. Chet is the most incredible gift, because in the aftermath of sin is when most of us grow. Most of us don't really grow. I'm sorry? Because chet is the enabler for tshuva. Tshuva doesn't normally happen without chet. Chet is a gift. When I say a gift, I mean we don't run after it. But once you have it, it becomes the most incredible opportunity for personalistic, cathartic growth and change. I'm sorry? Say that again. If you had chet without tshuva,
it's not like an automatic gift.
It's an opportunity.
It's like any sayim.
Correct. Meaning, again, understand, Baruch Hashem, you're a group of nashim sidkaniyos. I could talk from a sinner's perspective, right? So understand. Most times in life, you don't grow when things are going well. You grow when you hit a brick wall and you do something and you can't believe you did that. You have the opportunity for the most overwhelming and incredible growth. So in that respect, chet is an absolute gift. Now again, when I say gift, I'm not saying chet is good. I want to be clear. I'm saying ex post facto. Obviously, a person shouldn't say, you know what, I really should commit an Avera, because again, it's going to be good for me. It's going to be good, right? It's going to pave the way for such incredible explosive. Just obviously, again, I'm talking about after the fact. The goal is, when faced with an Nisan, when faced with a Taiva, the goal is obviously to overcome it, because that in and of itself allows for incredible growth as well. But after the fact, chet itself becomes a golden opportunity for tshuva. That's why the Gemara says, "Makom shebali tshuva omdin, tzadikim gemurin in omdim sham." There's something that comes in the aftermath of chet that you cannot replicate without chet. There's a brokenheartedness that is there that propels a person to do something so much bigger, so much greater. Anyway, but let's bring this back for a second. So therefore, we have this. How did we get into this? Okay, so anyway, so back to our regular scheduled program. All right. Right, thank you very much. Thank you, good. Right, so now, right, and that from that we got to Thornbush, from Thornbush we got to Bechira, from Bechira we got to Chet. Good, excellent. So now, understand, let's bring this back a little bit. So I just want to point out, just it's important, because a lot of times in life, if we're honest with ourselves, when we don't accomplish things, we use God as an excuse. And we use theology as an excuse. It obviously wasn't Ratzon Hashem that I didn't accomplish it. Now, it's true. If you go to 7 Mile Market and they're out of 7 of the products on your 15-item shopping list, yeah, of course, that's beyond your control. But my example is very specific. You went. All 15 products are there. They're all there. You didn't get 7 of them. That's not a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's your Bechira. You want to see on a deeper level, it's all part of the Ratzon Hashem. And after the fact, Kadosh Baruch Hu, okay, maybe. But remember, I want to point something out that's very important. Is Judaism a philosophical religion? So this is a very important question. Judaism, in general, does not really focus all that much on philosophy. For one simple reason. Philosophy usually only creates what? Philosophers, who in turn create more philosophy. Judaism is an actional religion. An actional religion. We have mitzvos asei, mitzvos osei. The body of Jewish philosophy, like the Rambam and others, really came about as a response to other things that were happening in the world. That the Rambam understood that people had profound theological questions. In fact, it's interesting. You know, we mentioned before about the Rambam, about Bechira. So I'm sure, have you ever seen this piece inside Rambam Hilchos Tshuva? I'm sure you've seen it over the years. So the Rambam, again, I think it's the 3rd or 4th paragraph of Hilchos Tshuva, discusses this question by Bechira. How could it be that I have Bechira, Hashem Baruch Hu knows I'm going to sin? So the Rambam essentially says, the answer, we don't understand God's foreknowledge. We don't understand what it means that God is all-knowing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything. So the Ravid comments on the Rambam. The Ravid says, what are you doing? He says, why do you bring up a question if you don't have a sufficient answer? And it's fascinating because it almost appears like from the Ravid's perspective that if the Rambam would not have brought it up, people wouldn't ask the question. And from the Rambam's perspective, the Rambam understands that what? You think people are just asking that question because I brought it up in Hilchos Tshuva? People are always bothered by that question. So the notion that, so that's how the Rambam created a whole body of philosophy, because he understood people have questions. But in general, in our lives, philosophy, Jewish philosophy, is not a pursuit. Action is a pursuit. Changing yourself is a pursuit. Changing the world, even in some small way, is a pursuit. Philosophizing about things or trying to understand why God does what he does or how he does, that's not really our domain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need us to be accurate. Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu be HaKadosh Baruch Hu and I'll be me. But I'm just pointing out over here is that's why understanding what circumstances in life, what do I control? This is an incredibly important and yisodistic exercise that whenever you embark upon something in life, do I control the outcome here? Do I control it? And you have to be honest, because sometimes I don't want to admit that I control it. Why not? Because I don't want to be held accountable for results. But the Maaseh, sometimes I really do control it. So when do I control it? When don't I control it? If I control it, I must exert maximum effort. If I don't control it, what do I have to do? Exert maximum effort. Right? Either way in life, you always have to exert maximum effort. The shaila just is, what are the expectations? So in the 7 mile example, if I exert maximum effort, what's the expectation? I'm going to succeed. Right? In a lot of other things in life, I exert maximum effort, and what's the expectation? What's the expectation? We'll see what the expectation is. My expectation is it'll be good. I'm going to accomplish something good. What is it going to be? How is it going to play out? That remains to be seen. So Rabbi Lau goes on. Look what he writes. Paragraph A. End of paragraph A. Levichach. Mamshichat asashi. Paragraph B. He gives an incredible mashal. Listen to this. Lema adover domer. To what can this be compared? Lo adem shemaflig bisvinoso. Upitom ro bemerchak. Ma siro shokas bemihiros. Imagine the following scene. Person is on a boat. And he sees in the distance a sinking ship. He sees another sinking ship. Ve'esrim ha'anoshim sha'ala tovim bayam. And Achmon Al-San, he sees 20 people drowning at sea. Miad, who miskoni lezane kedei lischos la'avram, ulahatzil kichol shi'ala biyada. So what happens? He goes ahead and he quickly turns his boat in order to get to the people who are drowning now in sea, to get them and to save whoever he can. Kore la avro chavero, ma tokofitz liam, lemeilo lo sucha la hatzios kol esmentovim. So what happens? So let's call the guy Ruvain, right? So Ruvain's on his boat. He sees that there's a whole bunch of people on another capsized vessel drowning. Ruvain steers his boat. He's ready to jump overboard to start saving the people who are drowning. His friend calls out to him, Ruvain, what are you doing? Why are you jumping overboard? Are you going to be able to rescue all 20 people? In other words, what are you jumping over? You can't rescue 20 people. Paragraph C. In pikecho tshuvas l'tiyah. So if Reuven is a chacham, he'll say, Achim, ain't any yachal ha-hatzilas klasim. It's true. I can't save all 20 drowning people. Ach ha'im biglal zeh, ain't any mechuyev la-hatzilas ha-lapachos echad mehem. It's true, I can't save all 20. But just because I can't save all 20, should I not try to save at least one? Ve'emes amitz b'chol kochi, ulai asvik lahatzah afilu shtayim o'shlosha. And if I try really hard, maybe I'll even be able to save two or three. Ha'im mutr li lasheves b'chibuk yadayim. Should I just sit here with my arms folded? B'glal shememela yitbu kol acher. It's such a profound mashal. Just because I can't save all 20, should I not at least try to save one, two, or three? So paragraph D, Rabbi Lau writes, Lo alecha malacha ligmar. This is the meaning of Rabbi Tarfon's statement. Rabbi Tarfon says, your job, you don't have to worry about finishing the job. Bizman ha-katzara omid l'rshusecha, eino yocho l'haspik ha-kol, ach lo atah ben chorin li-batamena. It's true. Sometimes in life you can't rescue all 20. Lo alecha hamalacha ligmar. Often in life, you can't accomplish everything you wanted to accomplish. However, Just because you can't go ahead and save all 20, just because you can't accomplish everything you wanted to, how can you not at least try to do something? At least try to accomplish something. So really Rabbi Lau is saying the same thing as the Shtef and Eshter. Rabbi Tafon is coming along and saying, the enemy is the perfect of the good. Just because you can't accomplish something in perfection, just because you can't accomplish something exactly the way you would like to, just because you can't do everything, doesn't mean you should do nothing. How does this tie back to Perek Shira? So let's look at number 10. So actually, before looking at number 10, go back to number 1 for just a moment. So remember again, what did the Eretz say? The Eretz quoted a pasuk from Tehillim. L'David mizmar la'Hashem ha'aretz l'umna'ol tevel v'yoshveva. So L'David, right? So ultimately again, David says, the earth, la'Hashem ha'aretz umlo'a, the earth and everything in it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tevel v'yoshveva, the inhabited area and all that dwell in it. So what's the pshat? So look at the Radaki number 10. So coming full circle. The Radaki number says, L'David mizmar. So when, remember, interestingly enough, if you learn Sefer Tehillim, not just Sefer Tehillim, but if you learn Tehillim, so you'll see something amazing that happens. Very often, the different kapitlach of Tehillim were written at different stages of David HaMelech's life. Remember, not all of Tehillim was written by David HaMelech. Some of it is incorporated from earlier sources as well. But many of the kapitlach authored by David are reflective of different things happening in David HaMelech's life. So some of them, it's amazingly enough, an incredible amount of Tehillim is focused on the aftermath of the episode of David and Bathsheba. That was a profound turning point in David HaMelech's life on a variety of different levels. That the tension with Shaul are major points. But again, if you delve into it, many of the kapitlach give you a little bit of a snapshot of what was happening in David HaMelech's life. So the Radak says, when did David HaMelech write Kapitel Chavdalit? When did he write this particular kapitel of Hashem Haaretz Umelo'o? When did he write it? So look at Radak number 10. Zeha Mizmar, Chibru David Sheyomru, Oso Kishiyachnisu Ha'aron LeBeis Kodesh HaKadoshim. See, amazingly enough, David HaMelech wrote this kapitel to be sung by the Levitic choir when they would go ahead and bring the Aron into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the Beis HaMikdosh. V'haya Zeh, Acher Shehe'ela Ola Bahara Moriah. David HaMelech he created this kapitel. He said this kapitel after he offered up a carbon oil on Har Moriah. V'niklo elav hamakom v'yoda kisham yihye beis Hashem. He became known to David HaMelech that Har Moriah was going to be the site of the Beis HaMikdash, going to be the site. So David HaMelech offers up an ola, a carbon. And on that moment, when he offers up an ola, he composes Kapitel Chavdalid. Le David Mizmar, La Hashem Ha'aretz Umlo'o Tevel V'yoshveva, composes this kapitel, Mamish, standing on Har HaMoriah, the future side of the Beis HaMikdash, after having offered up a carbon ola. Kimo Shekasev Adivrei Hayomim, V'Armel Hashem Ha'aretz Tevel V'yoshveva. So what does this mean? So let's see what's happening over here. David HaMelech wanted more than anything to build the Beis HaMikdash. More than anything. Why wasn't he allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash? Right, so again, remember the Beis HaMikdash was supposed to be a place of Shalom. David HaMelech was a warrior. And therefore, again, the Beis HaMikdash was not supposed to be built by a warrior. It was supposed to be built by a ruler who reigned during times of peace. That was Shlomo. Shlomo ruled. So remember again, David HaMelech paved the way for overwhelming prosperity. And Shlomo HaMelech reaped the benefits of his father's work. So something amazing happened. So David HaMelech wanted more than anything to build the Beis HaMikdash. By the way, there's another reason David HaMelech wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Why does David, besides a desire to want to build the Beis HaMikdash, what was driving, what was fueling his desire to build the Beis HaMikdash? What would the Beis HaMikdash have represented for David HaMelech? So first of all, would have concretized and solidified his Malucha. Good, what else? I'm sorry, somebody said it. Forgiveness. Remember, David HaMelech knew that he was forgiven by the Ribon Sholom for the episode of Bathsheba. David HaMelech knew it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew it. Who didn't know it? Klal Yisrael. David HaMelech was humiliated every single day of his life. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos brings down that when David HaMelech walked into the Beis Medrash, you know what they would say to him? David, tell us, what's the punishment for adultery? What's the, they would taunt David HaMelech every day. What's the punishment for adultery? So David HaMelech says, it's death, but at least he has Olam Haba. But Amal bin Penei Chavero Berabim, you embarrass, you humiliate someone, Ein lo chel Olam Haba. David HaMelech was taunted every single day that he was an adulterer. He was taunted every single day that he violated the Isra of Eshes Ish. Now, he knew that he was forgiven by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbon Shel Olam knew that he was forgiven by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember again, the proof of David HaMelech's forgiveness by HaKadosh Baruch Hu was what? The proof of his forgiveness? The most tangible display of his forgiveness? Shlomo. The son that he had with Bathsheba was the link in the chain of the dynastic monarchy. And remember, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu name Shlomo? Yedidya, the beloved one of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. David HaMelech has to live his life. He knows that he was forgiven. He knows that he was forgiven. He knows it. Bathsheba knows it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows it. Klal Yisrael, or at least those detractors, didn't know it. For David HaMelech, the Beis HaMikdash would have been the tangible display of divine forgiveness. So in addition to wanting to build the Beis Hashem, which of course, in addition to building that which would unite Klal Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash for David HaMelech ultimately serves as the tangible sign of divine forgiveness. Now the truth is, that forgiveness came, but when did it come? When David HaMelech dies. Remember, you know the story the Gemara says. They're right, the Beis HaMikdash is built, they're coming to dedication, they get to the gates, and what happens? The gates won't open. They start davening everything. The only time the gates opened was when? When Shlomo HaMelech says, Ba'avur David Avdecha, Al Toshev Pinei Mishichacha. Only once David HaMelech's name was mentioned did the gates of the Beis HaMikdash open. And the Gemara says, Ba'osa Shah, in that moment, David HaMelech's detractors, their faces became kishuli hakidera. They became like ashen because they realized that they had tormented. David HaMelech was tormented his entire life. And they realized, his detractors realized, his tormentors realized that they were wrong. But David HaMelech was long gone by then. Forgiveness came in this world. The tangible display came, but David HaMelech was already in Olam Haba. He was already in Gan Eden when that occurred. So something amazing happens. David HaMelech wanted more than anything to build the Beis HaMikdash. But the Ribbono Shel Olam told him in quite unequivocal terms, no. So listen to this. In that moment, when David HaMelech was told that he could not build the Beis HaMikdash, he had two options, right? Option number one, so what could he have done? He can't build the Beis HaMikdash. So now what? What should David HaMelech do? What should he do? Nothing. What am I going to do? I can't build the Beis HaMikdash. Let's move on to something else. But what does David HaMelech do? Number one, he purchases the site, which was a threshing floor, right? From a Rav Nahal Yavusi. Number one, he purchases the site. Number two, he goes and he offers up karbonos. And number three, what does he do? David HaMelech's crowning accomplishment was Sefer Tehillim. Do you know why Sefer Tehillim was right? What was the primary role of Sefer Tehillim? The primary role. Good, true. But why? Why did David HaMelech write Sefer Tehillim? Sefer Tehillim was the book of music, were the musical compositions for the Levitic choir. David HaMelech says, I'm not going to be around to see it, but I'm going to purchase the real estate. I'm going to consecrate the place by offering up the first karban, the first ola there, before this Beis Hamikdash. And I am going to compose all of the music, which will be sung in the Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech realized that his perfection was unattainable. Perfection would have been building the Beis HaMikdash. So what do you do when perfect is out of reach? And David HaMelech teaches us, when you can't achieve perfection, you can always still achieve what? Good. Very good. Great. So I can't build the Beis HaMikdash. I can't get what I want. But I'm going to do the next best thing. The real estate, the Ola, the music. Yes. It is not only a good question, that's a perfect question. Right? What do I mean by that? Meaning, this is a general life question. Sometimes in life, you try something, and it's not, as they say, zelo holech, right? It's just not going. It's not working. How do you know in life when you really just need to try harder, versus sometimes when the brick wall means you're just going down the wrong path? That's a great question. That's life. And the simple answer to that is, you often don't know. Sometimes the reason you can't generate perfect results is because you're doing the wrong thing. Sometimes the reason you can't generate perfect results is because you're not trying hard enough. And sometimes you can't generate perfect results because perfection is really unattainable in this circumstance. How do you know if your life situation is A, B, or C? There's a lot of tools, right? That's why Chazal tells us, a person has to have a mentor in life, someone who they go to for Eitzah. Right? When it says Rav, you know, Rav could be a Rebbe, but Rav could also be a teacher, a mentor, anyone who has more life experience than you, to look to for guidance with these things. Person then often has to ask themselves, why am I doing the things that I'm doing? Why am I doing it? Because a lot of times in life, we tell ourselves we're doing things for a particular reason, but I'm really doing it for a totally different kind of reason. And a lot of times, if my motivations aren't good, maybe this is not the right path to go down. But it's an excellent question. I struggle with this each and every day. When you encounter resistance, does the resistance mean I'm barking up the wrong tree? Is it just not the right path? Does resistance mean that Kadosh Baruch Hu tells me I'm on the cusp of something? You know, there's a beautiful vart. I'll save the bar for next time. Hey, so does the resistance mean ultimately again that Akash Baruch Hu is telling me to try harder? It's the great challenge of life. You're right. David HaMelech had the fortune of hearing directly from God. And there's a beauty in that. There's a clarity in that. Right? He knows he's not allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash. So now, you know, here's your glass ceiling. You're not building the Beis HaMikdash. Well, it's fine. I can't build the Beis HaMikdash. I'll do everything else until then. But let's bring this all back together. So what is the message of the arts? Remember again, Perek Shira is all about the natural world communicating to us different life messages. So what's the message of the world? L'David Mizmar, L'Hashem Ha'aretz Umotev. What was David HaMelech saying? David HaMelech saying, Baruch Shalom, the world belongs to you. So according to Radak, what was David HaMelech saying? Only you control perfection. The rest of us live in a sea of imperfection. And because we live in a sea of imperfection, our goal can't be perfection. Our goal has to be good. Our goal has to be great. Our goal has to be something beautiful. Our goal, our job in this world, is simply to try. Perfection belongs to the Ribono Shel Olam, the Aretz tells us. L'Hashem Ha'aretz Umlo'otel Ve'osheva. Everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, there is only one being in this world, in this universe, who controls the results. There is only one entity who has the ability to achieve perfection, and that is the Ribono Shel Olam. So the good news is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could achieve perfection. I can't achieve perfection. But now that I know that I can't achieve perfection, what's my avoda? My avoda is to try. My avoda is to put in effort. My avoda is to do good, to do great, and to do better. My avoda is not to lose myself in delusions of perfection. My avoda is not to hide behind perfectionism because I'm scared or I'm insecure about failure. The Ribono Shel Olam controls perfection. My job is to put in effort. Why does the Aretz say this? This goes back. I mentioned this last class. What errors any part of nature could have said this? Why is this dafka the message of the Aretz? We mentioned this last class. Excellent. Because remember again, the Eretz was the first time that this concept became manifest. Because remember again, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating the fruit trees, remember again, we mentioned this, it's supposed to be Eitz Pri Yosef Pri. Fruit trees which taste like fruit. The fruit will taste like fruit, the trees will taste like fruit, everything tastes like fruit. Perfection! Perfection! But then what happens? Eitz Oseh Pri. So the Eretz was the first one of the creations where there was supposed to be an element of perfection, but then perfection, quote unquote, does not actually come through. So the Eretz says, I know what it's like to see perfection, but not be able to achieve perfection. The Eretz's message to us is don't aim for perfection, because that's not within your reach. And don't allow perfection to scare you off from trying. Perfection belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our avoda is to put in effort. Our avoda is to try hard. our avodas stop hiding behind perfectionism to shield our insecurities and our fears of failure. Our job in life is to try the best to our abilities. Our job in life is even to realize when I can't have exactly what I want, how I want, the way I wanted it, try to make the best of the circumstances. Just as David HaMelech wanted so badly to build the Beis HaMikdash, but he couldn't. But what did he do? He didn't just give up. He didn't just throw in the towel. Instead, what he says, if I can't have what I want, I'll at least maximize what I'm able to have. All right, we'll stop over here for today. And Mirat Hashem, we will continue in Parak Shira on Wednesday. Mm-hmm.